This next story takes place a little closer to home on Vancouver Island. Vancouver Island, of course, that great island in Canada that we see as we look out from Port Angeles. And if you were to travel up the west coast of Vancouver Island, you would find that it's a landscape that's very broken up by many long, narrow fjords. Those are valleys that were carved by glaciers that are now flooded by seawater. And this story takes place in one of those fjords, one of those inlets, an inlet known as Nootka Sound. And if you traveled into Nootka Sound, you would see the water, of course, and you would see the steep mountains, rugged mountains, and you would see tall trees. This is timber-cutting country. And if you sailed into Nootka Sound far enough, you'd eventually come to the small community that's known as Gold River. And at the time this story takes place, in the early 2000s, the community of Gold River was struggling. Because it was a community, it was set up to support the timber industry. So it had this big pulp and paper mill. That's what most of the jobs were. And in the late 1990s, that mill closed. So a lot of the jobs, just gone. So a lot of the people left. And there were some people who tried to change jobs, change industry, sort of marginal success. But at the time this story takes place, there were a lot of people in Gold River who were just trying to figure out what to do next. Now, Nootka Sound is also the homeland of the Machahat Muchlat First Nations. Now, these are a proud people. They had lived there for millennia. They had pulled abundant fish from the water. They had hunted the game in the forest. And it had been their great chief, Chief McKenna, who had met with Captain Cook when Captain Cook sailed up the west coast of North America back in the late 1700s. But in the centuries that followed, there had been smallpox and any number of social challenges. And so at the time this story takes place, the Machahat Muchlat First Nations, they were just trying to hold on to what they felt was sacred. And then one day, in June 2001, something wondrous happened. A lone orca whale swam into Nootka Sound. Now, orca whales, some people call them killer whales. They're the ones that are black and white. And the males get a tall dorsal fin that's 6 feet tall, so as tall as I am. But this lone orca swam into Nootka Sound. And this orca, it was a young orca because it was small. And small is relative. It was about 12 feet long. But this lone orca swam into Nootka Sound. Now, the first people that noticed this were people who worked on this boat that was called the U-Chuck 3. And the U-Chuck 3 was one of those boats that was left over from World War II. It ran supplies and people and equipment between the various small communities there on the west coast of Vancouver Island. And it had been one of the crew who had looked over, and in this small bay, he'd seen this lone orca. And this little whale kept its distance. But soon, as the U-Chuck 3 was going by, you know, just chug, 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 this little whale started coming out to the boat. And he was a charmer. This little whale would jump and play in the wake. It would zoom around the boat. It was so much faster than the boat. And there was this time where they stopped the boat and everybody came out on deck. And the little whale came up and just blew these little sprays of water, these little raspberries, just and sprayed the crew. And there was one of the crew, he put his hand down in the water and waved it back and forth. And the little whale turned on its side, put its peck fin up in the air, and waved it back and forth. Well, the word got out about this little orca, and soon anybody who went out on the water ran a pretty good chance of encountering this whale. And it was very obvious that it wanted to interact. So there was a time where a man stopped his boat and the wind blew his hat into the water and the little whale dove down and came up with that hat perched on his nose. And then somebody had a rubber fender on the boat, tied a line to it, threw it in the water. The little whale took it in its mouth and they gently played tug of war. Soon this little whale was going up to boats, opening its mouth and allowing people to rub its tongue. And as people that were doing this, they were looking around, they were like, where are the other orca? Because you never saw orca by themselves, let alone young ones. So where had this little whale come from? Well, the answer to that, in part, came from a swirl of gray on the little whale's back. Because every orca has a swirl of gray on its back just behind its dorsal fin. It's called a saddle patch. And the shape of that saddle patch is as unique to that whale as fingerprints are to you and me. So as photos started getting out about this whale, the researchers said, we know this whale. They knew it was a male. They knew he was 2 years old. He had been born into a family of whales that the researchers called L-pod. When the little whale had first been noticed, a Seattle newspaper had held a contest to name the whale, and so the whale had been given the name Luna. And earlier that year, the researchers had done a census of L-pod, and they had discovered that Luna was missing. And so they had just assumed that Luna was dead, because when little whales go missing, you know, they don't show up again. But now the researchers were confused, because L-pod had never been seen anywhere near Nootka Sound. Its territory was more down near Seattle. So they were like, what would have possessed this little orca whale to leave its family, to swim over 200 miles up the west coast of Vancouver Island, and how had it found enough salmon to eat along the way? To put this in human terms, this is the equivalent of a human toddler that finds its way from Portland to Seattle under its own steam, finding enough Cheerios and strained peas along the way in order to survive. You know, it just didn't make sense. But wonders don't always make sense. So suddenly for the people of Gold River, I mean, nobody was talking about the mill shutting down. Nobody was talking about a dismal future. Everybody was talking about Luna. And for the Machahat Muchalat First Nations, Luna meant something more. Because earlier that year, their leader, a man by the name of Ambrose McKenna, became ill. And the plan of succession was when he died, the leadership would pass to his son, a man by the name of Mike McKenna. Well, when that elder was lying on what would become his deathbed, he said, after I die, I want to come back as an orca. And then he died, and then Luna showed up. Now, if Luna had been with his family, he would have been communicating with them with a lot of clicks and whistles and things that we humans are only beginning to understand. And he would have swum with them in close proximity. There would have been a lot of touching and interaction. An L-pod was led by an elder female, probably Luna's mother. And every member of L-pod was a close relative. So a sibling, an aunt, an uncle, a cousin. And Luna would have swum with them for the length of his entire life, which, as far as we know, orca live about as long as humans do. But isolated up there in Nootka Sound, Luna had no family. He had no L-pod. So he created a pod out of people. It got so that Luna recognized familiar boats. So when they were out on the water, he would go out to those boats, and he would rub on the underside of those boats. He would rub on the underside of kayaks, but very gently. And there was a day where a man came off the water and he would say, my dog was at the stern of my boat looking in the water and that whale came up and touched noses with my dog. My dog has touched noses with a whale. But not every interaction with Luna was welcome. Like with, if you were a fisherman and Luna showed up, it was like all the fish, they were gone. And sometimes when he rubbed on the underside of boats, he would damage sensitive navigational equipment. And there was one fisherman who was heard to call out over the water, Luna, knock it off, stupid whale. But Luna was a child, and children can be forgiven. Well, when the authorities found out about Luna, they were not happy. Because orca in this region are considered endangered. And so to interact with them is to interfere with them, and that is against the law. So the Canadian Department of Fisheries and Oceans dispatched a law enforcement officer up to Nootka Sound. And just like that, it became a crime to interact with Luna, even if Luna initiated it. Ed Thornburn was the mild-mannered fisheries officer who suddenly became the whale cop. And he had his work cut out for him. He arrived and he would see a boat out there and he'd see Luna swimming around and he'd be like, oh, busted. You know, throw his boat in gear, zoom out there. But the boat operator would be like, oh, no, just engine problems. Everything's fixed now, though, and Luna showed up. Or the boat operator would say, oh, you know, just ran out of gas, switching tanks, and Luna showed up. But the whale cop, he was persistent. And so soon those interactions with Luna diminished. So Luna started coming into the marina at Gold River. And he started rubbing on the underside of boats that were tied up at the dock. And sometimes he would come and he would just rest his chin against the dock and watch. And there was a day that a man was working on the dock and he had a chain and he accidentally dropped it in the water. And Luna dove down and came up with that chain in his mouth. Well, now the biologists were not happy because whales are supposed to interact with other whales, not with people. And the longer that Luna was used to being around people and interacting with people, the more they ran the risk that Luna would be injured or worse. So in 2003, 2 years after Luna showed up, the authorities announced that they were going to try to capture Luna to reunite him with his family. And their plan was this. Now, first of all, they were going to train Luna to follow the whale cop's boat. And then they were going to monitor the activities of L-Pod. And if L-Pod ever came anywhere near Nootka Sound, they would lead Luna out and Luna would be reunited with his family. But if that didn't work, they were going to assemble a pen there at Gold River, lead Luna into the pen, capture him, put him on the back of a truck, probably suspended in slings and keep him wet, they would drive him over the island and re-release him in waters closer to his family. Well, now the people of Gold River were not happy. They were like, who are these people, these biologists, who think they know what's good for Luna? Hey, look, Luna came to us. Why are you messing with our whale? And they also asked, and what about that aquarium? Because an aquarium had expressed interest in Luna. And the authorities said that the plan was not to capture Luna and sell him to the aquarium, but if they found they couldn't re-release him, they wouldn't rule it out. Well, now the Machahat Muchalat First Nations were not happy. Because was Luna a reincarnated chief? Yes, no, maybe. But this, Mike McKenna did know. Luna was a wild creature, and he deserved to live out his own destiny. Well, in the end, L-Pod never went anywhere near Nootka Sound. So the authorities came, they assembled the pen, and they announced to the world the day they were going to capture Luna. And media from all over the world poured into Gold River. And the day of the capture, it was bright and sunny and clear, but there was just this buzz in the air, this nervous tension. And the people of Gold River, they came down to the shore and they looked out and they could see, well, there was the pen, there was the whale cop, and out there in Nootka Sound, there was Luna. And the whale cop, he threw his boat in gear, started heading out. And that is when they heard the singing. And everybody turned their head in the direction of the song, and out from behind the pier came two long cedar dugout canoes, the traditional boats of the Machahat Muchalat First Nations. And these two canoes, they were tied together and there was a mast, and each canoe was lined with paddlers and someone was beating a drum. And as they paddled, they sang their traditional songs. And they paddled out into the inlet and Luna went right over to those canoes. And then they turned their canoes and they started heading up the sound, paddling and singing. And Luna played in the wake and zoomed around those canoes. And then the breeze came up, so they put up a sail, and the wind pushed them up the inlet. And Luna came right along those canoes, and the people reached out, and they ran their hands down his body. And they felt his face, they felt his lips, they touched his teeth. And all the while, somebody was beating the drum, and they were singing, and their voices rang up and filled the inlet. They took Luna about 30 miles up the Sound into a small bay. They thought, if we can just keep Luna busy, the authorities will never get him. And in the days that followed, every time the authorities attempted capture, there were the canoes. They'd be paddling and they'd be singing, and Ed Thornburn would call out with his megaphone, "Cease and desist! You are breaking the law!" And they would just sing louder. But there was this one day where the wind, it was blowing and the waves were big, and it was really hard for those canoes to make any progress. And the people in the canoes watched as Luna left the canoes and went over to the whale cop's boat. And Ed Thornburn was like, "Okay, Luna, come on, Luna, come on, Luna." He threw his boat in gear, started leading that whale toward the pen. The canoes were way off in the distance as he's leading Luna. And eventually when he gets to the pen, the whale cop just drives his boat into the pen. And then Luna gets to the edge of the pen and he dives down. And when he comes up again, he is way out in the bay. And the whale cop's like, "Ah," you know, turns his boat around, goes out, gets Luna, "Come on, Luna, come on, Luna," leading Luna towards that pen. Canoes are getting closer. And this time when Luna gets to the edge of the pen, he veers off. The whale cop's like, "Ah," he goes out, gets Luna. This happens time and time again. Each time those canoes are getting closer and closer. And finally, there was the time where the whale cop drives his boat into the pen, and there is Luna on the edge of the pen, and the canoes arrive. And so Luna, that small orca whale, had to choose the pen or the canoes. He chose the canoes. And they never did get Luna in that pen. And in time, the authorities came and they pulled up that pen. They put that on the back of a truck and they drove that truck over those mountains and out of there. And when they did that, they left behind more than a free whale. They left behind people who looked at the world around them with fresh eyes. At that water, at those mountains, those rugged mountains, and those tall trees. And in it all, they felt a profound sense of pride in its wildness. It was a feeling rekindled with the help of a young orca whale, Luna.